of Sharpton held hands today and prayed together. Governor Bush met with the two ministers after they led a march to the capital of Florida to protest a 14-year-old's death after a beating at a boot camp. Most of the protesters dispersed after leading a loud demonstration. Hundreds of college students had participated. Iraqi politicians have agreed to a slate of nominees that may finally pave the way for a unified government in Baghdad. Shiite officials say Jawad al-Maliki has been chosen to take the place of current Iraqi Prime Minister Ibrahim al-Jafri, who agreed to step aside yesterday. The officials say Sunni and Kurdish parties also agreed to present nominees for other top jobs to parliament tomorrow. A Shiite official says Jalal Talabani, who's a Kurd, will stay on as president for a second term. A Sunni Arab and a Shiite leader would keep their jobs as vice presidents, and a Sunni would become parliament speaker with a Shiite and a Kurd as deputies. It's now 3 wins, 3 court losses for the makers of Vioxx. A jury in South Texas found Merck & Company liable for the death of a 71-year-old man who had a fatal heart attack within a month after taking Vioxx. 10 men and 2 women deliberated more than 8 hours before returning the verdict. Merck lawyers contended that the man's heart attack was the end result of decades of heart disease, but the family attorney argued that, quote, Merck lied and people died. Betty Ford back home. A spokesperson says the First Lady's returned to the California desert home after an overnight hospital stay for some tests. No details, but Mrs. Ford is said to be just fine. Air America Radio News.
Well, good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Air America Radio. Yes, it is Friday. We have Good News Week coming up for you here in a couple of minutes. Also joining us at the bottom of the hour will be the president of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association, a man named John Carr. And you know, I very seldom have guests on this program, but I think this man needs to be heard. He'll talk about the reason why the skies are soon going to be much more dangerous, because the Bush crime family is cutting air traffic controllers, safety measures, wages, protections, all sorts of things. So we're going to have him on for a few minutes. Stick around for that. Happy Earth Day tomorrow. And to celebrate, I've decided to go on CNN tomorrow night at 10 o'clock Eastern time. If you want to tune in, it should be a real hoot. We're going to be talking about the gasoline situation, the oil situation in the United States, 10 p.m. tomorrow Eastern time. I know. I said I've had enough of these cable companies. I wouldn't do it, particularly CNN, because they piss me off the most, because I used to work there, and I feel that they should be the most responsible of the cable news networks, and sometimes they're the least responsible. So it should be interesting. 10 p.m. tomorrow night. Ugly story has developed this evening, late this afternoon. Federal charges have been filed against the woman who interrupted the highly scripted little welcoming ceremony between the president of Whoville and George W. Bush yesterday. Remember? This was a woman who had a press pass, one-day press pass. She was standing up on the camera stand and started shouting in English to Bush, stop oppressing the Falun Gong. Your time is running out. Anything you have done will come back to you in this lifetime. Asking Bush to intercede on the behalf of this persecuted religious sect or cult, whatever it is, in China. Well, she was escorted off the premises, of course. You don't exercise your First Amendment rights in this country any longer unless you are in a First Amendment zone. And this woman obviously was not in a designated First Amendment zone that was provided for the Chinese protesters several blocks away from the White House, where no one could see them, no one could hear them, nobody gave a damn. This woman was creative enough to get onto the White House grounds, and now she is facing a $5,000 fine and 6 months in prison. Not jail, prison. This is a federal misdemeanor charge. The law was designed, get this, to protect foreign dignitaries and official guests from intimidation, threats, coercion, or harassment. Well, but she wasn't even talking that much to the president of Whoville, was she? She was trying to address her comments to Chuckle Nuts. And, of course, Chuckle Nuts, the only thing out of his mouth was, you're okay, to the Chinese leader, who at that point was probably thinking, get your filthy hands off my silk suit. You saw those pictures, right? And the other pictures that are out there now show cameramen, a cameraman from the Chinese news service, I would guess, the Chinese television network. He is obviously Chinese, putting his hand over this woman's mouth, covering her mouth. But you see, this is accepted practice in China. You don't speak out against the great leader, the dear leader, especially if you're a woman. If you're a woman, your body is easily violated. All someone in the vicinity has to do if you are speaking freely is to cover your mouth, and you will shut up or something else will happen. Incredible. So this woman has been charged. She was released on her own recognizance. She appeared before federal magistrate Deborah Robinson in Washington. A preliminary hearing in the case is set for May 3rd. She has been ordered to stay away from the White House. Now, by the way, she is a U.S. citizen. Oh, Jesus. So our attorney friend in St. Paul, Minnesota, dropped me a quick note. His name is Mike. He writes, today when the authorities criminally charged a woman who heckled President Hu, the authorities spit on the grave of every single person that was killed in the Tiananmen Square uprising. Our government, which purports to be the last beacon of freedom and hope for human rights in the world because of our revolutionary history and our alleged military might, our government, when they charged this woman with a criminal offense, our government has allied itself not only with the Chinese government, but any entity that has suppressed freedom, whether through overt tyranny, torture, military exercise, or the subtle act of censorship. Yes, when our government threatens to throw a woman in jail when she has merely spoken out in support of freedom and human rights, our government has reallocated itself to the ash heap of history. It hurts to say this, Mike, because I'm a true patriot, and I know our citizens deserve better than the radical right wing, which has usurped authority in this country. And it's signed Mike in St. Paul. Yeah, I thought about that, too, when I saw the story that, remember, what was it, 1989, the utter innocence, right? How could they have known, the students in Tiananmen Square? The utter innocence of erecting something that they called, what did they call it, the Statue of Liberty appearing, Miss Freedom, Miss Liberty, I forget. It's not that important. Don't email me. But there they were. They built this thing, and for 3 or 4 days, it was my goodness. Look what's going on. And then of course the People's Liberation Army moved into Tiananmen Square and opened fire. And no one knows. No one knows. Was it hundreds that were killed? Thousands? No one knows. But Bush, of course, being who he is and what he's about, will align himself with any dictator. As Bush has said, it's easier to be a dictator if he's the dictator. Jim emailed me and said, regarding CNN's Elaine Quijano, who spoke against rather than for the Chinese-American protester, this was being carried live, we mentioned this the other night, Frederica, what's her last name, Whitaker? I don't know her last name. She was anchoring, and this Elaine Quijano spoke against this woman rather than for the protester. Jim writes in and says, I'd like to ask a few questions. Whenever Castro comes to the U.S., he is followed by anti-Castro demonstrations wherever he goes. Where is Elaine Quijano then? Would she dare speak against these anti-Castro protesters? I don't think she would have such courage. Instead, Jim writes, of being critical of the courageous Chinese-American protester, our media and Elaine Quijano should have joined with her, decrying, among other things, the mass murders going on in China. Well, yeah. But you see, Jim, and you know this as well as I do. I'm just being ironic with you now. But there are good commies. Well, they're not even commies anymore. I don't know what the hell the Chinese are. Fascists. They're actually state-sponsored. I don't know what their system of government is. By the quickest definition, it is fascist. Absolute fascism. And Bush wants to make this country fascist, and Tony Blair wants to make the UK fascist. Fascism is having, this is springtime for fascism. It really is. So the Cubans, however, are not fascists. They're socialists. They have a dictator. Yes, of course they have a dictator. Can you imagine, though, if we go back 40 years? Jesus, I was in high school. I was in high school. When the Castro Revolution took place and overthrew Fulgencio Batista, the dictator, right-wing, murderous son of a bitch connected to the mafia that ran Cuba. And Castro, for about 6 months, was even looked at by the leadership of the United States at the time, Eisenhower, as being, he was an agrarian reformer. Those of you as old as I am, you'll remember this. Castro, the agrarian reformer, he made a trip to the United Nations to address the UN. And he was a young man. Hell, I don't think he was even 30, was he? Was he 30 at the time? Maybe just barely. During that trip, he let the cat out of the bag, and he said he was a communist. Oh! damn! But you see what Castro's done? This old son of a bitch has lived 40 years since then, and his country has continued on. It's had its successes, but because of the ongoing embargo by the United States and other countries against Castro, the people there, as usual, the people are suffering. But I wonder, as Jim writes, I wonder if Elaine Quijano would be so quick to condemn a protester that shouted against Castro.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio. Your picture-perfect lawn, suddenly destroyed by two types of insects. No matter. Backed by Bayer's 100-plus years of crop science expertise, Bayer Advanced created Complete Insect Killer. The only product that combines two chemistries to eliminate insects above ground, plus below ground for up to 3 months. Guaranteed. Time to kick back and relax? Not if you're a damaging pest. Bayer Advanced Complete Insect Killer. Better science, better results.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, three buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. Two little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4K9-HERO or visit searchdogfoundation.org. Made possible by Searchdog USA.
They should not protest because it is in the best interest of freedom and humankind.
Oh, okay. The Chinese president thing. Just one more thing here. This I know it's not about what we're about on this program, right? But then again, it is, because Bush has sold this country to China. The Chinese are one of the reasons the Project for New American Century insisted on the invasion of Iraq and are insisting on the use of nuclear weapons and an invasion of Iran. It has nothing to do with getting the oil before China gets it. God only knows how much oil China has that they've never tried to for which they never tried to explore or discover. This is about having military bases that surround the Chinese empire. So the confrontation that's coming, and it is coming, I don't know if it'll be in my lifetime or your lifetime, but it is coming, will be between the so-called West and the Chinese. So it is kind of important to maybe, perhaps, sort of stay abreast of this. But Hu Jintao, the president of China, got almost everything he wanted out of yesterday's visit at the White House. According to the, is this the Hartford Courant? I believe it is. He got a 21-gun salute. He got the review of the troops. He got the Colonial Fife and Drum Corps. He got the exchange of toasts and a meal of wild-caught Alaskan halibut and mushroom essence, $50 a bottle of Chardonnay, and live bluegrass music. And he got an Oval Office photo op with Bush, who nodded and smiled as if he understood Chinese when Hu was speaking. If only the White House hadn't given press credentials to a Falun Gong activist who 5 years ago heckled Hu's predecessor, Jiang Zemin, in Malta. Ah, you see? Sure enough, 90 seconds into Hu's speech on the South Lawn, the woman started shrieking, "President Hu, your days are numbered," and President Bush stopped him from killing. This is the same woman who heckled Jiang Zemin in Malta 5 years ago. Bless your heart. Bush and Hu, according to the Hartford Connect, looked up, stunned. It took so long to silence her, a full 3 minutes, that Bush aides began to wonder if the Secret Service's strategy was to let her scream herself hoarse. The rattled Chinese leader haltingly attempted to continue his speech. "You're okay," Bush gently assured Hu, but he wasn't okay, not really. The protocol-obsessed Chinese leader suffered a day full of indignities. The official announcer said the band would play the national anthem for Republic of China, the name of Taiwan. When Cheney donned sunglasses for the ceremony, that's an insult. When Hu, attempting to leave the stage via the wrong staircase, was yanked back by his jacket, Hu looked down to see Bush pulling on him. Then there were the intentional slights. China wanted a formal state visit, such as Jiang Zemin got, but the administration, the Bush crime family, refused, calling it an official visit instead of a state visit. Woo! Bush acquiesced to the 21-gun salute, but insisted on a lunch instead of a formal dinner. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, my God. Bush apologized to the angry Chinese leader in the Oval Office for the appearance of the Falun Gong reporter. But apparently it didn't work. National Security Council official Dennis Wilder said later, "Frankly, we moved on." And then it closes by saying, "Maybe," but Hu was in no mood to make concessions. In a meeting with Bush, he gave the U.S. side nothing. Nothing. After the closed-door talks, Bush said, "We don't grant everything, but we're able to discuss our disagreements in a spirit of friendship and cooperation." You know what that means in a diplomatic talk. That son of a bitch really just kicked my butt. He really did. And so I kicked back. I don't know. Got an email here from one of the DU people, Democratic Underground people, about the CNN gig tomorrow. Yeah, I'll be on tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern time. 10 p.m. Eastern time. I'm not sure who the anchor is. I'm not sure what the program is. What is it, CNN Saturday night? Is that what it's called, Kathy?
I don't know. Usually I'm doing something more interesting than watching CNN at 10 o'clock on Saturday night. If nothing else, I'm sleeping.
I know. Me too. Saturday night is my night, you know, not Friday night. But I just have to do this. Poor Randy Rhodes has been doing all the yeoman work, appearing here, appearing there, all over CNN, all over wherever they ask you to go. And, you know, I just said I've had enough of these bastards. I just don't want anything to do with them. But they keep calling, so can't let Randy do all the work, right? Huh? Plot was revealed today. A bunch of students in Kansas were going to shoot up a school on the 7th anniversary of the Columbine, or the 7th anniversary? The Columbine shooting? And Bill in Santa Fe emailed in and said, I think it's very curious that these shootings always seem to take place in the so-called heartland of America where family values are so often bragged about. Is it my imagination, Bill writes, or are these acts always happening in the good old red states? No, it's not your imagination at all. Was it 7 years ago or was it 9 years ago? Well, I know it was anniversary. Yeah, it's always in the red states. Always. The divorce rate is higher, the abortion rate is higher, the murder rate is higher, crime rate is higher, and plans to wipe out college or high school students are always higher in the red states. But you see, the devil is loose in the red states.
I know it's true. Oh, so true.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
I'm so glad you got tickets to this concert.
Yeah, definitely. These guys put on a killer show.
Great, let's go.
Wait, it's just the open band. Let's get a little stone first. It's crazy strong. Here you go.
This is the moment your guidance can prevent your teen from smoking marijuana. So visit theantidrug.com and learn how to set clear rules about drugs. Parents, The Anti-Drug. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Ooh, are you okay?
Oh, it's my arthritis pain.
Here, try my Aleve.
People with arthritis are sharing their good news about Aleve. Just two Aleve have the strength to stop arthritis pain all day. That would take 8 extra strength Tylenol. So try Aleve and see for yourself. Then share your good news. Comparison based on 24-hour label dosing. Use as directed for minor arthritis pain.
May is Arthritis Month. Join Aleve and the Arthritis Foundation for the annual Arthritis Walk taking place nationwide. For more information, visit AleveGoodNews.com.
Some of the best minds in the automotive industry, using some of the most sophisticated design facilities. Engineers from Ford Motor Company are working together on a common mission, creating safer cars for our families and our children. Ford is renewing its commitment to driving American innovation. At the core of that effort is your safety, because every single life saved is worth it. Ford, driving American innovation.
Every generation has a story to tell. For those who lived through the war in Iraq, it's The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell by John Crawford. The New York Times best-selling account of a man who opposed the war but fought on the front lines. The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell is the first on-the-ground memoir to make an impact, raves the Times Book Review. Jon Stewart of The Daily Show says it's a wonderful read. Time Magazine calls it harrowing and exquisite. Read The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell, now a Riverhead paperback.
from the left. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. All right, let me tell you what's going on here. I was not aware of this because the focus on this program, off this program, has been the destruction wreaked against this society by the Bush administration, the Bush crime family. John Carr is the president of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association, and in having him on the air, we want to address what's going on here. A backgrounder sheet was sent to me, and it says America's air traffic controllers are warning of serious safety concerns after the Bush administration and the FAA walked out of contract talks, rejecting an offer that would have saved taxpayers $1.4 billion. The backgrounder says the administration is now trying to exploit the law to impose a contract that would actually create a situation where it would be better for 4,000 veteran air traffic controllers to retire than to continue performing their vital jobs. Let's talk with John Carr. He's serving his second term as the president of NATCA. He has worked as an air traffic controller in Kansas City, Chicago, terminal radar approach control, and most recently in Cleveland. John is also a Navy veteran. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I've got to ask you something right at the start, okay? Let's clear this off. I got an email just a couple of minutes ago from a former PATCO member, Professional Air Traffic Controllers Organization. I'm sure you're aware of them.
Right.
And he's kind of pissed off, John. He really is, because he says, here's what he says. This August is the 25th anniversary of the PATCO strike. And he writes, "We struck for exactly the same things this man is going to talk about tonight. They took our jobs and got everything we ever asked for, and then some. Now they're crying too that things are dangerous." How do you respond? I don't want to put you on the spot here, but I mean, this is a fair question, because I remember when Reagan came to office and that strike was in effect, and Reagan said to hell with you and fired them all. And I remember how weird it was to think, my God, these are experienced people that were asking for working conditions and pay and benefits. What's the difference between PATCO and NATCA?
Well, we are the successor organization. We were organized and actually certified as a labor organization in 1987. And your writer makes some valid points in that the FAA is very much like Bill Murray in the movie Groundhog Day. You know, I think the agency is doomed to keep doing it over and over until they get it right. They haven't completed modernization of the system, and the current administration has gutted and cut many modernization programs. They don't deal in good faith with their employees, which they did not do in the precursor events leading up to the strike of 1981. They haven't planned for the future, which is why we're facing a tsunami wave of air traffic controller retirements. Now, I would disagree on one point, and that is we've gone out of our way to work with every administration, both the previous Democrat administration and the current one, to try and get PATCO controllers rehired. It was not until Bill Clinton's executive order in the middle 1990s that they were even eligible for federal employment, and ever since then we've done our very best to make sure that hiring stream is the one that is used and included in other hiring streams as they add air traffic controllers to the system. But to be perfectly honest with you, they haven't been adding air traffic controllers to the system, and that's one of the dilemmas we currently face.
Is the Bush administration about to do to NATCA what the Reagan administration did to PATCO?
I don't think they're going to do that. What they've done is they've walked away from good faith contract negotiations with America's air traffic controllers. We put a package of wage and benefit concessions on the bargaining table on April 5th that represented $1.4 billion, and the FAA stood up, declared impasse, and walked out. And the reason they could do that, and the reason they could walk away from the table, is because a little-known proviso in federal law, which says that you negotiate until you reach impasse, but in this particular instance, with the FAA only, if they reach impasse with their unions, they're allowed to punt. They're allowed to abrogate their responsibility, more or less, drop it into the laps of Congress, and if Congress does not act in 60 days, whatever the FAA says goes. It's not negotiations. It's not even collective begging at that point.
Wow.
It's just whatever they decide by royal decree is imposed on an unwilling workforce. And the net effect of that is going to be one in four air traffic controllers are not only eligible to retire over the next year and a half, they're going to be compelled to retire. The FAA's proposal is a financial disincentive to stay.
Mm-hmm. In other words, the ones who stay will miss out on certain retirement benefits?
Exactly. The FAA's proposal is a series of wage cuts and freezes such that, Mike, if you and I were hired on the same day, and the strike in 1981, it's very important for everybody to remember that because an air traffic controller's career is typically 25 years long.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 81 plus 25...
Right.
That's right about now.
Right now.
So the post-strike workforce that was hired in the 12 or 24 months immediately following that horrible event, well, they're all eligible to retire right now. There are 3,700 air traffic controllers that are going to be eligible to retire before we finish this interview. There's going to be 40% of the nation's air traffic controllers eligible to retire by the end of the decade. So the time to have hired that replacement workforce is not now.
Mm-hmm.
It takes 3 to 5 years to train an air traffic controller. If you hired 3,500 people tonight, you would have 3,500 air traffic controllers in 2010. So we don't have the pipeline.
Right.
The administration has basically missed the boat. They did not hire, you know, at regular intervals. They have not filled the pipeline with students. And now they've decided to sort of punt on a contract negotiation, impose their will on the workforce. So, again, using the example of 1981, if you and I were both hired in 1982 and we're both eligible to retire, well, if I retire, I get regular increases in my retirement annuity because I'm a federal employee who has retired, and I'm in the retirement system. If you stay and work, your pay's frozen and cut for 5 years.
Now, as my understanding, these talks have been going on since last July. Is that right?
Exactly.
The talks between NATCA and the FAA.
Yes, we went to the table last July with 150 different articles in dispute between the parties, which isn't unusual. That's not a really large contract, and there's many subjects that we're not even permitted to bargain on, like retirement and health care and other benefits generally available to federal employees.
Well, let me ask you this, John. I don't quite get the thinking in going after air traffic controllers, either in the Reagan era or the Bush era. But flowing out of that concern on my part, I'm a nervous flyer. I will fly. I'm going to fly to Sacramento here in about a week from Atlanta. I'm a nervous flyer. I'll do it. But, you know, what about safety for guys and women like me who need to fly, who will fly, but get tense about it?
Well, the truth of the matter is that the agency's actions are going to increase congestion, and they're going to increase delays, and it's going to reduce the margin of safety. And if you think about safety as an onion, they're starting to peel back the layers of the onion. Now, can you peel one layer back and still have an onion? Well, sure you can.
Yeah.
Eventually, you're going to peel enough layers back that you're not holding an onion in your hand anymore. But I will tell you that the men and women who staff our nation's air traffic control system are the most dedicated safety professionals in the history of aviation. I mean,
mm-hmm.
They proved their worth on the morning of September the 11th when they landed 5,000 airplanes in 2.5 hours without incident.
Right.
They are the ones who drove southbound towards the Gulf Coast to staff those towers and radar rooms so that we could all watch in amazement as those Mercy flights flew in and out of the Gulf Coast last summer. So
mm-hmm.
They're not going to let the system become unsafe. The net effect for the traveler, however, is going to be one of increased congestion and increased delays and a decreasing margin. It's no different than when you go to the grocery store and you're standing in line with your gallon of ice cream watching it melt, and you're wondering to yourself, why don't they open these other checkout stands? They got all these cash registers. They're all ready to go. If they just staff them, I could get out of here.
All
well,
right. Now, as a nervous flyer, I don't know that you just reassured me. I understand the dedication of air traffic controllers. My God, it has to be there. You guys carry an awful lot of human lives in your hands, handing off and accepting as flights work their way from point A to point B. Why? And let me get an answer for you here within a minute, and then we'll take a break and we'll come back and finish up. Why are air traffic controllers, it just seems to me, why are they attacked? This is the second time. What the hell is going on? I mean, that's a critical industry, isn't it?
It's absolutely critical. It composes almost 10% of the country's GDP. It really comes down to the Bush administration and to the FAA administrator pursuing their ideological agenda. And in this case, that's undermining collective bargaining rights. This FAA administrator has not reached agreement with a single one of her employee unions, and there are many of them. The Professional Airway System Specialists, no contract. American Federation of Government Employees, no contract. Association of Government Employees, no contract. Us, no contract. So it's not as if, you know, we're standing out alone in a field here. This FAA administrator has not negotiated in good faith with a single one of her employee groups. That's why it's critical that Congress get involved. That's why we started the Fair FAA campaign.
Right. So this, once again, with this Bush administration, this is an ideological a battle and has nothing to do with economics or passenger safety or a worker advancement. It has to do with their ideology that union's bad, no union's good. It's
absolutely, and that's right.
Can
Congress
you hold, John, hold that thought, because we got a break. When we come back, we'll have about 4 minutes, and you can give us a possible solution here, what you want people to do, all right?
Perfect.
Let me put you on hold. We'll be right back. We're talking with John Carr. He's the president of the National Association of, the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on Air America.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Are you losing your hair? Fight back with Avacor, now with Boost, which gives you visibly thicker hair with the first application.
I'm 20 years old and I've been losing my hair for 3 years. I started using Avacor and my hair stopped falling out. It's working.
Well, I'm 72 years old and I can tell you honestly, I have a fuller, healthier head of hair now than I did when I was 18 years old. Avacor really works.
Whether you're 20, 72, or any age in between, Avacor works. An Avacor Boost will improve your hair's appearance the same day you receive your order. Call now and find out how you can get 3 months of Avacor free with your order. Call 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420. This is a limited time offer, so call right now. 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420.
End your day screaming with Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
Stretch to the point of no turning back. Fly to fancy on a windswept feet.
It's about 10 before the hour. We are talking with John Carr. He is the president of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. His union has been involved in negotiations with the Federal Aeronautics Administration, the Bush administration, for about the past 10 months. The FAA has walked away from these negotiations, these contract talks, and it could could leave and probably will leave if it's not resolved. American travelers, American flyers in even more awkward condition than we're in now, with airlines going bankrupt, overcrowded flights, yada yada. You know the story, John. What you see as the possibility of the FAA returning to the bargaining table?
Well, Mike, the FAA is no different than FEMA. It's a federal agency that tasked. Well, seriously, it's a federal agency that is tasked with the public safety. And quite frankly, if you had asked the people on the Gulf Coast a year and a half ago, they would have told you that they fully expected that FEMA would step in and do their jobs. And history has recorded that they did not.
Mm-hmm.
We are here to warn about what we see as serious safety issues before the levee breaks, so that the American public can call their congressmen and call their senators and stop this risky scheme. The FAA administrator disrespects air traffic control work, and she disrespects her workforce. But Congress can step in. Congress can act to restore fairness and accountability to this process. In fact, Senator Barack Obama and Representatives Sue Kelly from New York and Jerry Costello from Illinois have all offered the Fair FAA Act in both houses of the Congress. The Fair FAA Act would stop the FAA from imposing their will on an unwilling workforce and instead would send all of the parties to binding arbitration. The Senate version of the bill has 30 co-sponsors. The House version of the bill has almost 200, including 50 moderate Republicans. Steve LaTourette from Ohio has been very helpful. Sue Kelly from New York, Lobiondo from New Jersey. These are moderate labor-centric Republicans who understand that the fundamental fairness and accountability and integrity of the system is at stake. So we've set up a multi-million dollar public education campaign. And again, we're not advocating for increased wages. We are educating the public because we see a safety-related concern. And like I said at the top of the show, we went to the table with $1.4 billion in concessions. Yeah. It was $1.4 billion in tax savings that the administration got up and walked away from. But our public campaign is the Fair FAA campaign. It's at www.fairfaa.com, F-A-I-R-F-A-A.com. It's at 1-877-FAIR-FAA, F-A-I-R-F-A-A. That number will pipe you right into your congressmen and senators. You can tell them to stand up for fairness and accountability with the FAA's workforce. The website has got information on every side of the issue, and really it's a policy choice that should not be made by a political appointee with a constituency of one.
Yeah, right. Now, you might be going too fast here. FairFAA.com. That's where people can get information what NATCA wants the public to do is to contact members of Congress and address this issue. I lost my train of thought. Damn. I know what I was going to say. You mentioned moderate or labor-centric Republicans in Congress who obviously come from districts where the unions are still operating. But the fact is that neither the Congress nor neither the Senate nor the House are controlled by these kinds of Republicans. They are controlled by Republicans who are just as ideological driven as Bush. What will it take to get the kind of hearing you want and to get a resolution as the way you want it?
The example that I use is the Dubai ports deal. You know, that was going to be the best thing since sliced bread, and in 10 days, the American public flipped that thing like a flapjack at IHOP because they did not want those ports done that way. It wasn't done by commentators. It wasn't done by the media. The American public contacted their congressmen and their representatives and their senators, and they said, I don't want that Dubai ports deal to go down that way.
Mm-hmm.
And this can be that. If the American flying public is okay with their inherited gold standard air traffic control system being cheapened not being modernized, workers being disrespected, and the gold standard basically being shown the door, then they'll do nothing. If they care about the system, if they want to maintain the world leadership that they currently enjoy, and quite frankly, our national airspace system is not unlike many public safety institutions, police and fire and others that we have. Mm-hmm. These first responders, these air traffic controllers, they maintain systems that we all have just come to know exist. And we walk through our lives with a certainty that we will be okay and that safety will be ensured. Well, these systems are at risk when public policy choices are made by political appointees, and I don't think that that should be so. And so we're willing to put our money where our mouth is and mm-hmm. educate the public and let them make the choice. And
well,
if the public
is,
weighs in.
This is going to sound, I guess, kind of trivial, but ever since I saw that movie, what was it, Pushing 10?
Right.
About the air traffic controllers, those scenes inside the control towers just had my palms sweating. So I have an awful lot of respect for what you people do, and I think anyone who's ever gotten on board an aircraft, a commercial aircraft in this country, should support this. That would be millions of people. I hope this works out. Again, I had no idea this was going on, John, and I think most of the American public doesn't know this is happening because we have been crushed with so much other stuff, whether it's the potential use of nukes in Iran or the Gulf Coast tragedy here, or it just goes on and on and on. I've never seen an administration like this to line up, stack them up like they're waiting for landing permission, all these different crises. John, thanks. I appreciate it. We'll talk again, I hope, okay?
It's your time, Mike. Have a great night.
All right, sir. Thank you. The website is FAIR, F-A-A, FAIR, FAA.com. Please check it out. If you fly, if your family flies, get involved in this one, okay? We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Air America.
Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
Your lawn's enemy, grubs. Their mission? To destroy your lawn. So, backed by Bayer's 100-plus years of crop science expertise, Bayer Advanced created season-long grub control with Merit, number one choice of professionals. No other formula kills more grubs, plus a single application protects your lawn for an entire season. Guaranteed. To grubs, it's the end of the road. To lawns, a new lease on life. Bayer Advanced season-long grub control. Better science, better results.
Hey, Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here, and you can hear me, of course, on Air America Radio. If you're as fed up with the Bush crime family as I am, you need to go to ImpeachBushGame.com. That's ImpeachBushGame.com, where you can get the new board game, Impeached, that points out the lies, incompetence, and stupidity of George W. and the entire Bush crime family. You'll have fun playing this eye-opening board game that dares to peek into the Bush administration. Impeached will challenge your ability to lie, cheat, and steal. I'm for real here. Order your game now at ImpeachBushGame.com.
Air America Radio News, I'm Bill Crowley. A senior United Nations official says almost 15,000 detainees are being held in Iraq by government ministries in violation of Iraqi law. and almost as many are being held by the U.S.-led multinational force. Only Iraq's Justice Ministry is permitted to hold detainees for longer than 72 hours, but the head of the U.N. Human Rights Office in Baghdad says most Iraqi-held detainees are actually under the control of other government departments, specifically the Interior and Defense Ministries. The U.S. said in February it was holding over 14,000 detainees at four major prisons, including Abu Ghraib. That figure didn't include people picked up and held at local jails. The U.N. official said those detainees should be brought before an Iraqi judge to be found guilty or released if they're innocent. He also said cases of torture and summary execution are happening every day. Some Sunni Arab and Kurdish parties are already indicating they will accept a new Shiite nominee for Iraqi Prime Minister. The current Prime Minister, Ibrahim al-Jafri, has decided to step aside so a unity government could be formed. The leading Shiite party today chose al-Jafri's ally, Jawed al-Malazi, as the new nominee. That may finally move Iraq closer to a unity government. The slate of nominees may be presented to Parliament tomorrow. The CIA fired an employee for leaking classified information to the news media. That reportedly included details about secret CIA prisons in Eastern Europe, which recently won the Washington Post a Pulitzer Prize. The Post reported the CIA had set up a covert prison system after September 11th that at various times included sites in eight countries. That Post report on the secret prisons provoked an international uproar. A CIA spokesman says the worker was fired for having unauthorized contact with reporters and disclosing secret information that violates the secrecy agreement everyone signs who works at the CIA. Two men arrested in the U.S. in connection with alleged terror plans. The FBI says there is and was no immediate threat, but the two Americans indicted in connection with the terror cell authorities say was contemplating attacks in the U.S. Affidavit saying a 21-year-old Georgia Tech student and another man went to Canada and are now under arrest and indictment. This is Air America Radio News.
Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. We're going to get to this Condoleezza Rice story here in about 60 seconds. Apparently, Josh Bolton was not brought in to get rid of Rumsfeld. Maybe it's Condoleezza who's leaving. In fact, there's a strong chance that she may be indicted. We'll have the story for you here in just a second. It's all over the place. The first person who sent me an email was Larissa Alexandrovna at rawstory.com, and I couldn't believe what she sent me. And now it's Report, Associated Press, Washington Post, Truth Out. It's all over the place. So we'll get to that in just a second. Here's another story that I don't know has been reported except on Keith Olbermann's show from San Jose, California, and Pat in Sacramento sent this to me. Hundreds of protesters beat drums and called for Bush's resignation today as the president prepared to speak to Silicon Valley leaders at Cisco Systems headquarters. Police restricted the demonstration to a few blocks from where the president was going to appear, meaning the motorcade would not see the colorful banners calling him everything from a criminal to a liar to a murderer. Karen Meredith, the Mountain View, California woman whose son, Ken, was killed 2 years ago in Iraq, said Ken's voice has been silenced, but mine hasn't. Today is the day we unwelcome Bush to San Jose. Five Muslim protesters were cited during the demonstration for jaywalking after they kneeled down and prayed in the middle of a road. A man named Dan Moore took the afternoon off work from Cisco to join the demonstrators. He said, "I just oppose the direction the president is taking this country, especially when America is supposed to be an economic leader. He seems to be more focused on issues that drive fear into people when there are more important issues like the economy." The reason he's out there, of course, is because Cisco CEO John Chambers is a huge Bush donor. Remember that the next time you're doing computer purchases. This is the part that's not, and Pat in Sacramento said, "Isn't it funny that none of our local stations are talking about how Bush changed his plans to speak at Stanford University due to the protests?" And Pat writes, "I only heard about it on Keith Olbermann's show, but the San Diego Union, posts this. Hundreds more gathered for a protest later in the afternoon at Stanford University, where Bush had scheduled a private meeting at the conservative Hoover Institution with scholars, including Hoover fellow and former Secretary of State George Shultz. Plans to hold the meeting on campus were scuttled when protesters blocked Bush's motorcade from going through the only entrance." Yay! Shultz, who was already hosting a private dinner for Bush later at his Palo Alto home, had the session moved to his two-story gray shingled house. At least three people were arrested for sitting in an intersection during the demonstration, according to organizers. Well, there you go. There you go. Maybe it's starting to happen. Maybe we've had enough of this son of a bitch. Maybe it's starting to happen. Maybe it's starting to happen everywhere he goes, or this slug, Dick Cheney, or this murderer, Rumsfeld, or this totally incompetent freak, Condoleezza Rice. Maybe it's starting to happen. No matter where they go, there will be protests, there will be blockages, there will be people to say no, hell no.
And apparently Negroponte is not too popular up on Capitol Hill these days. I don't know if you've been following that story. But this new national director of intelligence, he's being criticized left and right for making the bureaucracy bigger and even less communicative within itself.
Yeah, well, at least he hasn't organized death squads to take out members of the House or the Senate yet, Democratic members. I'm sure that'll come next. All right, now, this Condoleezza Rice story, that all of a sudden is all over the place. Here's the skinny, as they say. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice leaked national defense information to a pro-Israel lobbyist in the same manner, but landed a lower-level Pentagon official a 12-year prison sentence. That's according to that lobbyist's lawyer today. Now, who they're talking about here is this guy, the former Pentagon official Lawrence Franklin, who pled guilty to providing classified defense information to these two guys, Stephen Rosen and Keith Weissman. And Franklin was sentenced to 12 years in prison for doing that. Rosen and Weissman were lobbyists for the American-Israel AIPAC. You're familiar with AIPAC. Now, here's what it says. The allegations against Rice came as a federal judge granted a defense request to issue subpoenas sought by the defense for Rice and three other government officials in the trial of Stephen Rosen and Keith Weissman. The two are former lobbyists with the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee who are charged with receiving and disclosing national defense information. Defense lawyers for these two are asking a judge to dismiss the charges because, among other things, they believe the charges seek to criminalize the type of back-channel exchanges between government officials, lobbyists, and the press that are part and parcel of how Washington works. Stephen Rosen's lawyer, Abby Lowell, said the testimony of Rice and others is needed to show that some of the top officials and the U.S. government approve of disclosing sensitive information to these defendants and that the leaks may have been authorized. The issuance of subpoenas does not automatically require Rice or anybody else to testify or give a deposition. A recipient can seek to quash the subpoena. Calls to the State Department seeking comment late Friday were not immediately returned. Well, of course not. The indictment against Rosen and Weissman alleges that three government officials leaked sensitive and sometimes classified national defense information to the two, who subsequently revealed that they learned, who revealed what they learned to the press and to an Israeli government official. Now, the attorney for Rosen said it's impossible for Rosen and Weissman to determine what is sensitive national defense information when they are receiving the information from government officials who presumably understand national security law and therefore would not improperly disclose national defense information. That's a brilliant defense. That's a brilliant defense. I can say with a certain amount of certainty that Mr. Rosen and Mr. Weissman knew damn well how sensitive the national defense information they got really was. Because when you go to work for AIPAC, when you go to work for the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, for the most part, a lot of times you have a background in Israeli trained counterintelligence. These are not lobbyists in the sense that somebody lobbies for Mrs. Paul's meat pies or something. This is at the very heart of the interaction between the United States and Israel. Neither country trusts each other. Please understand that. All right. We have people in prison. Who's this guy? I'm drawing a blank on his name. The one that revealed all the information to the Israelis, and he was sentenced to prison, what, 12 years ago? Damn, I'm drawing a blank on his name. But the United States does not trust Israel. Israel does not trust the United States. Mossad looks at the CIA and the DIA and Cheney and Bush and these people as a bunch of fools and freaks. The Israelis have always understood that when push comes to shove, in their minds, I'm not defending or attacking anybody here, but the Israelis understand when push comes to shove, the United States cannot be depended on. The Israelis will take whatever action they think is right. It doesn't make a damn bit of difference what the United States says, thinks, acts, does. It matters not. The Israelis will first and foremost act in their own self-interest, which, when you get right down to it, makes sense. The American intelligence agencies, on the other hand, do not trust Mossad, do not trust the Israeli secret service organizations for a couple of reasons, not the least of which is the American intelligence organizations are jealous. They're not nearly as good. They never will be as good as the Israeli intelligence organizations. And I'm including, up to and including, the paid assassins who work for Mossad and for all the, you know, come on, let's be real here. Everybody uses them. But none of them are as good as Mossad. It's just simply a fact. And that's one of the reasons that American intelligence is very leery of Israeli intelligence. So, here we are. We have a couple of guys who are on trial, going to be on trial, for receiving intelligence and passing it on the Israeli government. But the incredible thing is the intelligence seems to have come from Condoleezza Rice. Can you imagine it? Condoleezza Valdez frog-marched in her fancy Ferragamos all the way to federal prison. This is the Bush administration. Bush, Cheney, Rove, Libby, Ari, and now fried rice. Oh!
listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Hey, Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Are you as alarmed as I am by the assault on our freedoms by the religious right? An essential element of freedom is the right to choose or reject religious beliefs. And this is why I fully support the Freedom From Religion Foundation, as it takes the lead in challenging the growing threat from the religious right in the United States. If you'd like further information on the dangers of living in a theocracy, please call 800-335-4021. 800-335-4021, or visit their website, ffrf.org.
There are two kinds of bikers. There's the tough, hardcore biker, like Smokey here.
Hey, bro.
And then there's the weekend rider, like Jeff.
Hey, man.
These two bikers couldn't be more different, except for one thing. You both have Geico motorcycle insurance. Because Geico covers most kinds of motorcycles, and they offer money-saving discounts. So, you see, you guys, you have more in common than you thought.
Neat.
For a free rate quote on motorcycle insurance, visit geico.com or call 1-800-44-CYCLE. Geico Motorcycle Insurance. Let's ride.
In the jailhouse now.
The role of the National Security Advisor to help unstick things that may get stuck. That's the best way to put it. She's an unsticker.
Yeah, she's an unsticker. Well, she's got her shapely legs in deep doo-doo now. Okay, it's not a sexist statement. I'm not the one who goes out and buys $500 shoes, when people are drowning on the Gulf Coast. The name I was looking for, and thanks to everybody who emailed, called, sent telegrams and carrier pigeons, is Jonathan Pollard. I just go blank on that stuff sometimes. Now, one last thing on this Rice story for right now. The national security law under which they have been charged. Now, these are lobbyists. This law goes back to World War I, when I guess President Wilson was afraid that the German U-boats off the coast of New Jersey or whatever were going to have an influence. This is a thing, and I can't stress too strongly, this love-hate relationship, and it's mostly hate, between Israel and the United States. AIPAC is the conduit through which all sorts of information that the United States government would like to consider to be classified reaches the Israeli government. And I'll use the term, I'm not trying to piss anybody off, but the enlightened self-interest that the Israeli government uses, look, they learned, excuse me, the people who comprised the first government in Israel and every subsequent government since 1948, they learned a very critical lesson. And this, my saying this is like saying, oh, by the way, water's wet. But I'll say it anyway. What they learned was, don't trust anybody. Are you out of your freaking mind? Especially not the United States. Especially not the United States. Not Russia. Not the United States. For God's sake, not England. They had to fight the British in order to get control of Palestine. Not the French. It goes on and on and on. Now, whatever your position, I am a strong supporter of Palestinian rights. So don't misunderstand. Don't send me emails. See, I get emails that say I'm anti-Semitic. Then I get emails that say I'm not sympathetic to the Palestinian cause. You know, and I say to anybody who sends me either email, oh, bat squeeze, get out of my face, get off my email, don't want to hear from you. We're talking real politic here. But the Israeli intelligence agencies no more trust the United States than the United States trust the Chinese intelligence agencies. That's just the way it goes. And every time we find someone who's spying for Israel, instead of patting them on the ass and say, oh, come on now, all you had to do was ask, we put them in jail for long periods of time, really long periods of time. Ever since the Israeli attack on the USS Liberty, that also was an event back in the 60s, that I think during the 67 war, that was an event that made it crystal clear to the U.S. government, crystal clear to the U.S. government, that the Israelis would turn against the United States in a heartbeat if it had to do with their self-interest. And again, I think that's wise. I think that's very wise on the part of the Israelis. This relationship between American evangelicals and the state of Israel is a phony, fake relationship anyway. But the Israelis are smart enough in their enlightened self-interest to use these dumb bastards. If Jerry Falwell wants to come over there and pray at the Wailing Wall, fine, come ahead. Come ahead. If it means extra support, if it means we get to buy military hardware from the United States, come ahead. But the Israelis understand what these Christian fundamentalists have in the back of their mind. Convert, Jew, or I cut your throat. They know that. They know that. So there is no trust. Don't ever, ever think that because every American politician kowtows to the Israeli government, don't think that those politicians, whether it is Hillary Clinton or Joe Lieberman or whoever the hell it is, don't think for a second that those politicians really trust the state of Israel to act in the interests of the United States. That is not going to happen. It has never happened, and it shall never happen. You do understand that, don't you? If the Israelis take out an Iraqi nuclear a power station back in the 80s, it has nothing to do with keeping the Middle East nuclear free except for Israel. It has everything to do with Israel protecting its own interests. And again, let me say it again, that is a very wise decision on the part of the Israeli government. To do any less would be to perhaps leave a door open just enough so that the promise of never again just might start to happen again. Now, I hope we're all clear on this. I don't want any charges in your emails tonight about I'm anti-Semitic or I'm not sympathetic to the Palestinian issue. Because I am sympathetic to the Palestinian issue, and I am not anti-Semitic. This is politics. As long as Israel is a sovereign state, when it needs its ass kicked on this radio program, I'll do it. And if you're Jewish or you're an Israeli supporter and you don't like it, I have a strong suggestion. Switch stations.
I'm sure that Europe is a lovely place to visit. My wife would love to go there every single year. But they're just puppies.
Yep, 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 yep.
They need to shut their yaps, the big dogs over here. I'm a little boy forever. I'm straight and white and male, American and free.
Condoleezza, check my puppy.
Bill O'Reilly, Devo Systems, Master Sturge and me.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Are you losing your hair? Fight back with Avacor, now with Boost, which gives you visibly thicker hair with the first application.
I'm 20 years old and I've been losing my hair for 3 years. I started using Avacor and my hair stopped falling out. It's working.
Well, I'm 72 years old and I can tell you honestly, I have a fuller, healthier head of hair now than I did when I was 18 years old. Avacor really worked.
Whether you're 20, 72, or any age in between, Avacor works. An Avacor Boost will improve your hair's appearance the same day you receive your order. Call now and find out how you can get 3 months of Avacor free with your order. Call 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420. This is a limited time offer, so call right now. 1-800-301-1420. That's 1-800-301-1420.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, three buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. Two little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4K9-HERO or visit searchdogfoundation.org. Made possible by Searchdog USA.
Every generation has a story to tell. For those who lived through the war in Iraq, it's The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell by John Crawford. The New York Times best-selling account of a man who opposed the war but fought on the front lines. The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell is the first on-the-ground memoir to make an impact, raves the Times Book Review. Jon Stewart of The Daily Show says it's a wonderful read. Time Magazine calls it harrowing and exquisite. Read The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell, now a Riverhead paperback.
I'd like to know who leaked. If anybody's got any information, they ought to take it to the Justice Department so we can find out the leaker.
Well, that just may happen, Chuckle Nuts, huh? Bush is going to be in Palm Desert, California, tomorrow, Saturday. Got an email from Shelley who says, please make every effort to participate and bring your friends. Okay, obviously I can't. This is for people out there. You can get the information online, I'm sure. But Palm Desert tomorrow, he should get the same kind of warm welcome he got today at Stanford University. And last thing, and then we're going to do this Good News Week for you. Be sure to watch 60 Minutes tomorrow. Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. A CIA official who had a top role during the run-up to the Iraqi war charges the White House with ignoring intelligence that said there were no weapons of mass destruction or an active nuclear program in Iraq. Now, that might sound like, well, duh. No. This is the former highest-ranking CIA officer in Europe. His name is Tyler Drumheller. And he says that the CIA gave the White House good intelligence to that effect. There's no there, and the administration chose to ignore it. Do we need any more proof that these sons of bitches took this country to a war based on lies? Do you understand that? How horrific must this be for the parents and husbands and wives of the 2,400 Americans who have died? God, I hate these people. This Bush crime family. Take a breath. So, if you get a chance, watch 60 Minutes. This guy, Tyler Drumheller, will be interviewed by Ed Bradley. And this is a show that needs to be seen.
Now, Mike, you're just demoralizing the troops again. You know better than to criticize the Bush administration during a time of war.
I know. Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's... That's the message is out there. That's what these murderous bastards, these people who want to kill more American soldiers, who want to kill more Iraqi civilians, want to murder more American Marines. And I'm talking about the Bush administration, every one of them. God, it's astonishing. It's unbelievable. And if this situation with Miss Rice turns out to be true. All right. This is a hell of a week. The voices we have for you are Bush, Rumsfeld, the quacking quackaroo, and I think that's it, right? Just those three. Listen up. It's Good News Week.
It's Good News Week. Someone's got the bombs away, contaminating atmosphere.
Look, I mean, there are a lot of rumors that go around at this time.
Matter of high speculation here in Washington. The game of musical chairs, I guess you'd say.
The president is going to be looking to Josh for his advice and counsel.
I expect him to design the White House structure so that it will function in a way so he's more likely to be able to do his job.
Do what he needs to do and what he believes is in the best interest of this White House and this president.
And, of course, he will bring different recommendations to me as to who should be here and who should not be here.
Rumors and speculation.
Here to announce that I will be resigning as White House press secretary.
It's going to be hard to replace, Scott.
I've been honored and grateful to be a small part of a terrific and talented team.
Change is difficult.
But I'm the decider, and I decide what is best.
I've been hearing about all of this, and I kind of would prefer to let a little time walk over it.
Secretary Rumsfeld's energetic and steady leadership is exactly what is needed at this time.
I don't appreciate the speculation about Don Rumsfeld. He's doing a fine job.
Rumors and speculation.
I strongly support him.
Full support for Secretary Rumsfeld.
Well, the progress has been good.
I have strong confidence. Doing a fine job.
We're not going to lose any battles out in Iraq or Afghanistan.
He's transforming the military.
I'm here at the Pentagon working on transformation.
I listen to all voices.
We need people like President Bush who are serious people.
I hear the voices.
Who spend a great deal of time thinking through direction for our country.
Maybe we're really not in charge.
Let's get it done.
I don't know whether you realize it or not, but the Internet began as a Defense Department project. The world is so big and so connected. Electrochemistry. chemistry and signal compression. The iPod, micro drive storage,
parabola curve,
aerospace technology,
little devices to look for sunspots.
You know, we live in a global world. We have got to educate our children now. A school that is setting high standards. Parkland Maggot Middle School.
Jesus, my head is spinning. Well, here's somebody who can calm it down from Memphis. It's Brother Sky Blue. Brother Sky, welcome to the program. Brother Sky? But
hey, Mike.
Yeah, you're in a room somewhere. You've got a radio.
Yeah, I've got three radios. They come and tell me turn them down all the time. Say, Mike, I understand about this Condoleezza Rice thing. This is heavy stuff, you know, that you're talking to. Condoleezza Rice and the Rosenbergs, you know, they put them to death, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
Say, but Mike, you know, there are some true chosen people in every age. And us Swedenborgians, we possess the true knowledge given from the ancient Hebrew writers, the book of Genesis. The leaves of the tree of life, the book of Revelation says, shall be for the healing of the nations. You know, the president of China, he went to see Bill Gates before he did the president. The scientific truth to save the planet, God's going to heal this planet, and the Christian religion is for real, and the book of Revelations can't be understood, and the John Hagee and the Trinity Broadcast and Network and all their satellites and jump.
Just when he gets cranked, every time, hallelujah. Praise Emanuel Swedenborg. Thanks for checking in. Brother Sky. It's difficult to place this administration on an historical timeline that is not really a timeline, but a stupid line, a stupid, venal, murderous line. It's really difficult. Who have we got? We got Reagan and Nixon. I guess Lyndon Johnson, he wasn't stupid. He was just, maybe he was misled. Maybe not. It was Lyndon Johnson who said in the campaign when he ran for election after the death of Kennedy, it was Johnson that said, why we'll never ask American boys to go fight in a war that Asian boys should be fighting. But when you think about real venality, real criminal activity, real just psychopathic, murderous individuals, I can't think of anybody outside the Nixon administration that even compares with the Bush administration. Reagan administration, I think 34 Reagan officials were indicted and convicted, and among those were three cabinet members. So you can make the argument that the Reagan administration was the most corrupt and criminal in the history of this country. That sort of thing is not happening with the Bush administration because the Republicans have a lock on investigations, inquiries, special prosecutors, whatever you want to call it, other than Patrick Fitzgerald, and that's moving as slow as molasses, but that's cool. But Bush and Cheney and Rove and Libby and Ari Fleischer and now Fried Rice, didn't Pappy Bush define this kind of act as treason? Why do they hate America? Why do these Republicans hate our country so much? Why do they continuously put Americans in danger by disclosing national secrets like this? Condoleezza Rice and Irving Libby and their shills in media like Novak and Judith Miller, why do these people hate my country so much? These rotten sons of bitches hate my country so much that they do this. And then they hide behind some facade of patriotism or Jesus loves me. Jesus hates your ass, all of you. Don't you understand that? Because you're warmongers. He said it. Blessed are the peacemakers. You're not blessed because you're not peacemakers. If you're not blessed, you're condemned, according to your funky religion. So get out of my face with your crappy unpatriotism and your crappy anti-religious, anti-God, anti-Jesus stuff. It is disgusting. Why do they hate America? Why do all Republicans hate America? But especially the ones in power. I can't get my mind around that. Not even going to try. Let's do some phone calls. Chad is calling from Ohio. Chad, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I've been on hold forever.
Come on, hour and 4 minutes. That's not bad.
Olbermann.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one show I watch on television that I actually trust. Andrea Mitchell was on there tonight, and her comment was, she hasn't seen anything like this since the release of the Pentagon Papers in regard to all the whacking that's going on with the people who are releasing classified information.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see it?
No. It's gotten to the point where I very seldom get to watch KO anymore because I'm getting my show ready. But, yeah, I agree with you on the program. I didn't see tonight's, no.
Oh, it's so hard to keep track of. Like you said, there's so many scandals.
One after another. They're like airplanes stacked up waiting to land here in Atlanta when there are violent thunderstorms. It's just unbelievable what these people are doing.
I know, and I can't. It's almost impossible to keep track of how corrupt these people are. I'm flying down to New Orleans on the 29th, and there are people there ready to welcome me so I can tour the devastation that George Bush is ignoring.
I know.
And it's like I'm going insane.
Hey, Chad, hold on a second.
All right.
I hate to hold people over the break, but you wait a long time. Stick around just for a second. We'll do the break, come back. This is Air America. I'm Mike Malloy.
I am the egghead. I'm the commander. I'm the decider.
I'm the decider, and I decide what is best, and what's best is for Don Rumsfeld to remain as the Secretary of Defense.
Sitting in a White House garden, talking to the Lord. But my thoughts would be busy, busy hatching if I only had a brain. I am the egghead. I'm the commander. I'm the decider.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Ooh, are you okay?
Oh, it's my arthritis pain.
Here, try my Aleve.
People with arthritis are sharing their good news about Aleve. Just two Aleve have the strength to stop arthritis pain all day. That would take 8 extra strength Tylenol. So try Aleve and see for yourself. Then share your good news. Comparison based on 24-hour label dosing. Use as directed for minor arthritis pain.
May is Arthritis Month. Join Aleve and the Arthritis Foundation for the annual Arthritis Walk taking place nationwide. For more information, visit AleveGoodNews.com.
Thanks a lot for the ride home. Hey, no problem, man. Just because you're a sophomore doesn't mean I can't talk to you.
Thanks.
Hey, while you're here, want to take a hit of some weed? Some good stuff. Here you go.
This is the moment your guidance can prevent your teen from smoking marijuana. So visit theantidrug.com and learn how to set clear rules about drugs. Parents, the anti-drug. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
And we're a country of deep compassion. We care. One of the great things about America, one of the beauties of our country, is that when we see a young, innocent child blown up by an IED, we cry.
Now, I defy anyone to tell me that that's not a comment out of the mouth of a man who is absolutely degenerate morally as well as being mentally ill. Back to Chad in Ohio. Chad, you got your own problems with Republicans in Ohio. Good God.
You have no idea what it's like to live here, Mike.
Well, you know, I grew up in Toledo, and I have a nephew who lives in Columbus. I've got a brother-in-law that still lives in Toledo and friends in Toledo. So, yeah, I do get a sense of it. I haven't been back there for about a year. But, Jesus, I to me, Ohio is just always like nowhere.
Well, here's my hope. The League of Women Voters has a lawsuit coming against Kenneth Blackwell in the election. I forget exactly what part of the government they're suited against. Mm-hmm. But that comes to bear in June of this year. And if he wins the nomination for the Republican Party, then good, because that's going to blow up in his face.
Well, the part of Blackwell's campaign that was disgusting to me was to see this cowardly, miserable bastard John McCain show up to support him. You know, John McCain, who wants, brain-dead Democrats, I guess, to believe that he's a liberal Republican or a moderate Republican. John McCain is to the right of George Bush. He keeps it well hidden the way Bush did. But for McCain to show up there and say he supports this criminal is just incredible.
Yeah, it is insane. Insane is the operative word. It's like, oh, McCain is a maverick. No, he's not. He's a conservative. He's as far right as far right gets.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
Getting back to what I initially called about.
Yeah.
When Andrea Mitchell addressed Keith Olbermann on tonight's show, she said it is as weird. Well, no, that's not the word she used. She said, there's nothing like this since the Pentagon Papers.
Mm.
That's what it's down to. Mm-hmm. I mean, the people in power, the Roves and the Cheneys and, you know, all those sick blah, blah, blahs,
right.
Insert your own expletive here. It's getting down to like a Saturday Night Massacre type of affair.
Well,
as far as I can tell.
Well, don't forget what the Saturday Night Massacre was. Those are people who were fired because
fired the prosecutor.
Right, because, he fired the special prosecutor, and then he fired the attorney general who wouldn't fire the prosecutor.
But that's what Andrea Mitchell said. It's that weird. That's what she said to Keith Olbermann.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the reason I called. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I just always am a little bit suspicious of Andrea Mitchell. You know, her husband is Alan Greenspan.
Yeah.
And she has she is more connected to the inner circle of neo-Nazi power in this country than anybody.
She looked really urgent when she said it to him.
Well,
and
maybe,
I kind of trust Keith.
Well, I do. There's no question. I trust whatever I hear on that program. That comes from Keith Olbermann and most of his guests. I've just always had kind of a twitchy feeling when Andrea Mitchell shows up.
Me too. Kind of gives me a feeling in the pit of my stomach.
She has always been a very strident mouthpiece for whatever right wing.
A capitalist. Yeah.
Well, beyond that, you know, it's almost like that's always been my impression. So I don't know. I hope that Andrea Mitchell is right this time. Maybe she's seen enough now to realize just how shockingly criminal this entire administration is.
I think you nailed it right there, Mike. I really do.
I hope so. Chad, thanks for checking in, pal.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, take care. I appreciate it. We'll talk again. Armin. Is it Armin who's calling from Sacramento? Is it Armin?
Sarasota, Florida.
All right. Armin in Sarasota.
Is long this... time, no talk.
Oh, Jesus. This is our old Armand. What the hell they got Sacramento up there for? This is Armand in Sarasota.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's been a couple of years. It's been a blessed 2 years, too, since, you know, that you haven't called in to irritate me. What's up, Armand?
Well, I've been listening in practically every night that you've been on the air, and you're doing a really good job.
Well, you know, I'm just kidding you. Good to hear from you. Although you are kind of an irritating caller, but it is always good to hear from you. As long as you keep it short, because I have an ice pick now, Armin.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Well, actually, we go back all the way back to IE, what, about 6 years now?
Yes, that's very true.
And when do you think this thing's finally going to come to an end? You think we're getting close?
This phone call or the Bush administration?
The Bush crime family.
I don't know, Armand. I think it's. I hope it's soon. You don't know about these people. They may drop a couple of nukes, like one on Tehran and one on Chicago, just to divert attention. Armand, we're out of time, but I'll tell you what. Now that you've decided to call back in again, I hope you'll call again. Just do me a favor. Will you do me a favor?
Yes, sir.
All right. When you call in, just, you know, be right on topic. Just you know, keep it within 3 minutes. All right?
Sure.
All right. Thanks, Armand. Take care. We'll talk next week. We'll be back after this break, Truth Seekers. I love Armand. I really do. This is Air America Radio.
Malloy on Air America Radio.
Ooh, are you okay?
Oh, it's my arthritis pain.
Here, try my Aleve.
People with arthritis are sharing their good news about Aleve. Just 2 Aleve had the strength to stop arthritis pain all day. That would take 8 extra strength Tylenol. So try Aleve and see for yourself. Then share your good news. Comparison based on 24-hour label dosing. Use as directed for minor arthritis pain.
May is Arthritis Month. Join Aleve and the Arthritis Foundation for the annual Arthritis Walk taking place nationwide. For more information, visit AleveGoodNews.com.
Every generation has a story to tell. For those who lived through the war in Iraq, it's The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell by John Crawford. The New York Times best-selling account of a man who opposed the war but fought on the front lines. The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell is the first on-the-ground memoir to make an impact, raves the Times Book Review. Jon Stewart of The Daily Show says it's a wonderful read. Time Magazine calls it harrowing and exquisite. Read The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell, now a Riverhead paperback.
Radio News. I'm Jeff Weiser. Gasoline wholesalers are blaming the industry's switch away from the additive NTBE to ethanol for the supply shortages that have impacted several East Coast states. The problems include the ability to ship enough ethanol as all refineries make the shift at the same time. It's only adding to the factors fueling the surge in gas prices as they reach and exceed $3 a gallon in many parts of the country. There are more increases to come as crude oil prices reached another record Friday, topping $75 a barrel. The CIA has fired one of its officers it has accused of leaking information to the news media about a series of secret prisons set up overseas by the agency after 9/11. NBC News identified the accused officer as Mary McCarthy. The CIA claims she admitted revealing classified information. They turned the case over to the Justice Department for possible criminal charges. Two unruly passengers on a United Airlines flight bound for Sacramento were taken into custody Friday afternoon after attacking a flight attendant in the air between Chicago and Denver. Flight 735 originated at Chicago's O'Hare Airport with a scheduled stop in Denver. This woman was a passenger on the flight.
He got us locked up to the pilot's cabin and started pounding on the door. Stewardess asked him to stop, and he hit her, and at that point, some people from first class jumped in.
Passengers say the man claimed to have a bomb. The plane arrived in Denver safely. New Jersey state health officials insist the public health threat is actually very low, but they've now confirmed that two test tubes of anthrax spores have disappeared from a state lab. The samples were collected after the anthrax contamination of the U.S. Postal Service Processing Center in Hamilton Township, New Jersey in 2001. President Bush has issued a directive which triggers the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to begin work to repair 29 critical levees under stress in the northern part of California. The president did that after a meeting with Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. And at a panel discussion, Bush had trouble describing the governor.
He is a really an interesting man, a person.
You're listening to Air America Radio News. I'm Jeff Weiser.
Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Just an update. Herb in Mississippi, who has been handling donations for Janice, the caller from Michigan, the woman who calls us in the darkness because her lights were turned off, can't get a job. She's a legal secretary looking for work. And her conversation resulted in several people wanting to send $5, $10 to kind of help things out. Janice is not looking for money. She's really looking for a job. But to get her lights turned back on, Herb in Mississippi has been handling the donations for us. I got this email from Herb. He says, tomorrow I'll be sending the first wave of donations to Janice. It should be over $100 if you want to let the people know. More is coming in that I know of, and I would guess it's going to be about $250 by the middle of the week. So, again, if you have any interest in this situation, just send me an email, and I'll forward it on to Herb. And Herb will get in touch with you or tell you exactly how to do it if you want to, you know, drop in $5, $10 into the kitty. And again, Janice is not looking for money. It would be great to have her lights turned back on, but she's made an honest effort, like a lot of people have. She goes to the library to use a computer. And, well, you heard the conversation, I'm sure. We talked with her a couple of times. So just an update for you. Thanks, Herb. I appreciate you sending this in. All right, back to just a reminder for those of you who can't get a date tomorrow night and you're home watching TV at 10 o'clock Eastern time, switch over to CNN because I'm going to make one more effort to go on CNN or any of these cable networks and talk about the issue that they want to talk about. And I'm sure they'll have some right-wingers stuck in some slot somewhere, but should be fun. Randy has been picking up all the slack for everybody at CNN, you know, going on the air trying to fight the good fight. So not just CNN, but MSNBC. She's been on what? MSNBC, and I don't think any of us would ever go anywhere near a Fox studio because you turn into a pillar of salt if you do. So tomorrow night, 10 o'clock Eastern time, just for the fun part of it. Terry is calling from Dallas. Terry, welcome to the program.
MM2X, how you doing?
Hey,
X2.
X2, all right.
Say, man, I had to call in about I think he was on your show, Robert Jensen, talking about The Heart of Whiteness, book.
No, not on my show. I usually don't have guests.
Oh, okay, but I know I heard it on Air America.
Yeah, I probably did, but not here, Terry.
Well, the one thing I got the point about Air America, at least, I remember one time you were saying that talk show don't offer nothing. It don't do nothing to benefit nobody's life. I've been listening to y'all about a year now since I came to Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say this for a fact. I'm a member of the Nation magazine. I get that. I'm a subscriber.
Uh-huh.
American Prospect.
Right.
And Mother Jones.
And you came to this because of Air America?
Well, due to the exposure to Air America.
That's cool. You know, don't misunderstand, and it's easy to, because I talk fast and sometimes I'm screaming and yelling. What I've said, I think this is what you're referring to, I've said that this program, my program, is not about solutions. There may be a couple of programs on Air America that is about solutions, but this one's not. This is where we gather to raise hell and storm against the power, and I have no solutions. I'm not that smart, Terry. But I do know when I get angry that I've got to let it out somehow. I don't kick my cat, and I don't abuse my kid, and I don't get in pick fights with my wife. I come on this program and scream and yell, and I invite anyone else who wants to vent.
Can I vent a little bit?
Sure.
Okay.
But don't say any bad curse words, all right?
Oh, no, never.
Okay.
But I got this for you. After I picked up the book today, there was a joke in there.
Yeah.
Now, he asked this question. One of his friends was asking him, is this joke racist? He said, why don't anybody want to be in the Miss Ebonic pageant?
The Miss Ebonic pageant?
Yes. He said nobody don't want to be Miss Idaho. Now, that's a white boy joke. Now, I'm going to flip the script on a culture joke from the black community.
Okay, go ahead.
Now, this is a joke my dad used to tell us as we was growing up.
Go ahead.
okay? He said niggas and flies. Niggas and flies. He said the more I deal with these niggas, the better I love flies.
Oh, no.
Now, I'm just saying that, and I want white people to think about that for a minute.
Well, I can't say,
you got this Bush crime family out there.
Right.
And now we got our own thinking.
We
can deal with certain things.
That's right.
Okay. Now, y'all dealing with something that we've been dealing for, what, about 200 years since this country been in?
Well, yeah. But I know you've been dealing with it for about 400 years. Look, let me tell you something. When it came out, this is before the attack on this country. When it came out, what the Bush crime family was doing, when was it, Kathy? Was it after the attack on this country when I said, look, to all the white people out there who don't have a black friend, go get yourself one right now, because black folks have been dealing with this kind of nonsense and this kind of hate and this kind of murder for the past 400 years. What, Kathy?
Actually, what you said, MMX2, was that white America was about to have a black experience.
Did I say that? Terry, I'm assuming that you're an American of African descent, but I can't. I'm getting real nervous, and so is my engineer when you use the N-word.
See, I love doing that to white people to see how y'all react.
It doesn't do anything to me. I've got permission. I've got permission to use that word. Okay?
Oh,
I've got permission from, I don't know, about 20, 30 black folk to use that word anytime I want to. But what we're talking about here is my radio network. My radio network doesn't give me permission. You understand what I'm saying?
Well, it's coming from me. It's not coming from you. But that's
what I'm saying. You've used it now about six times, and that's fine. But somebody's going to get pissed off here. And somebody's
And you know what? If they get pissed off over that, they tell you how little much they got to get pissed off.
I understand.
They got to let that go.
And I don't know that you're a black person anyway. You might be white.
No. If you saw me, you'd be swearing I was darker than midnight. Trust me. People that know me in Texas, they keep asking me, are you from America? Where you from? Nigeria? Trust me.
All right. But don't use the N-word. All right.
I ain't going to put you in that position.
I know. It really upsets white people, because white people use that when no black people are around. When a black person uses that in front of a white person goes, oh, damn,
Well, it's no big deal. I was on the bus today with a guy that was 24-year-old, white, had tat, dating a sister. He's dropping the N-word left and right.
Really?
Yeah, because he was telling me about some rap songs he was hearing, and we just discussed it. It's no big deal.
I'm telling
you, this generation that's coming up don't get too bent out of shape over words. They get bent out of shape over action.
I hear that.
I was just going to ask the caller which Beastie Boy was on the bus.
No, it wasn't Beastie Boys.
No, probably.
I don't ride with them. They're a little crazy.
Yeah, you on the other hand, Terry, you are just as sane as they come, right?
Hey, you got to be a little crazy to deal with this madness.
I know. Listen,
I'd rather be crazy than mad, like Bush.
That's true. Look, this is MM2X. Got to boogie. All right.
All right, buddy.
All right, Terry. Call back in again, but do me a favor. Terry?
Yes.
Don't just ease up on the N-word, all right?
I know it's fun
to shock white people, but give me a break. I love shocking white people myself. I love shocking black people. I love shocking Jewish folk. I love shocking Catholics. You understand? I'm into shock. Shock, 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 shock.
But if Malcolm X can use it, we all can use it.
That's true. Take care, Terry. Take care. We'll be back after this break. I'm Mike Malloy. Is there America?
Chillin' on his vacation, sitting patiently. You black folks gotta hope, gotta wait and see if FEMA really comes through in an emergency. But nobody seems to have a sense of urgency. Town of mayor's been reduced to crying. And guess what said niggas been used to dying. He said, I know it looks bad, just have to wait. But getting folks were too broke to evacuate. Niggas starving and they dying of thirst. I really had to go and check on them refineries first. Making a killing off the price of gas. He would have been up in Connecticut twice as fast. After all that we've been through, nothing's changed. You can call Red Cross for the pack with pains that George Bush don't like black people. George Bush don't like black people. George Bush don't like black people.
You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
first automaker to introduce factory-installed safety belts and roll stability control. First to introduce emergency trunk releases and offer head and chest side airbags. And who is working on future safety innovations, like lane departure warning and blind spot alert systems? It's Ford Motor Company. Ford engineers are working to help protect children, keep families safer, and save lives. Ford, driving American innovation.
The lies, incompetence, greed, and pure stupidity of the Bush crime family are all revealed in the game Impeached. Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Mike Malloy. And if you despise this crime family like I do, you need to visit ImpeachBushGame.com and buy the only board game that's bold enough to tell it like it is. Go to ImpeachBushGame.com, buy your game, and check out the Bush, Satan Rove, and Deadeye Dick voodoo dolls. I've got my game, and I'm sticking pins in my Bush voodoo doll right now! So visit ImpeachBushGame.com and join in on the fun today.
Frankly, in the vote I got in the African American community, I put people in my cabinet. I put people in my sub cabinet.
I put people in my basement. I put people on my cotton picking detail. Every time somebody says I might be a racist, I just kind of smile and point at Condoleezza and Colin. I put people in their attics in New Orleans. I put people everywhere. Son of God. And they put him in death row in Texas, too. Three pieces of great news here from David. Get this. Three members of the Illinois General Assembly have introduced a bill that urges the General Assembly to submit charges to the U.S. House of Representatives to initiate impeachment proceedings against George W. Bush for willfully violating his oath of office to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, and if found guilty, urges his removal from office and disqualification to hold any office in the United States. The Jefferson Manual of Rules for the U.S. House of Representatives makes clear that impeachment proceedings can be initiated by a state legislature submitting charges. The state of Illinois is on its way toward forcing on the House what not a single one of its members has yet had the courage to propose, articles of impeachment. The bill takes up the issues of illegal spying, torture, detentions without charge or trial, manipulation of pre-war intelligence, and the leaking of classified information. Now, if you want, you got something to write with? Quick, I'm only going to do this once. Here's where you can get information on this. The text of the bill and information on its status are available here. It's tinyurl.com, tinyurl.com/N like Nancy, H like House, S like Sam, numeral 3, R. One more time, tinyurl.com/NHS3R. Wow. Ed Asner, here's the second piece. Ed Asner records a PSA supporting investigation into grounds for impeachment. You can find that at afterdowningstreet.org. And Neil Young has released his new album, which includes Let's Impeach the President. And you can get information at, for that, too, at afterdowningstreet.com. One of our listeners, is it, who is it? Boy, I'm embarrassed. I'm just drawing a blank, and I do apologize if she's listening, but she and her husband are both musicians. I believe I've got this right. And she sent me an email three weeks ago that she and her husband were two of the people who were session players or singers on Neil Young's new album. And apparently it's a heart stopper. I think it went from conception to production in about 2 or 3 weeks. So there you go. I'm not aware that a state legislature could file. I know they can't file articles of impeachment, can they? They can certainly file a request as a state legislature to the House. This will be interesting. All right, back to your phone calls, please. Diane, whom we haven't heard from for a long time, is calling from Boulder. Diane, welcome to the program.
Hi. From what I've read, the Jefferson Rules of Order concerning the House, individual states can file for impeachment.
Well, I'll be damned.
It just is a matter of getting people off their butts and legislatures being able to say, we don't agree with this. We are seeing too many of our boys coming back dead.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they need to do. Thinking, what the heck am I talking about? I live in Colorado.
Right. Well, I don't think the Colorado legislature will ever do that, right?
Except it's Democratic held now.
Oh, it is?
It is.
Oh, well, all right.
There's hope. Tiny little smidgen itty bit, which probably will be nuked into the atmosphere because of divine strike.
Yeah.
It's a plot.
Right.
I know that nuke is inaccurate because it's not a nuclear bomb, except it's going to tear up all of that dust that was underburied, put away.
Oh, yeah.
The dust that killed Agnes Moorehead and John Wayne when they went out to the irradiated desert.
Well, it also killed or made sick Clark Gable, the people who what was that last movie that Marilyn...
The Misfits.
The Misfits, right. Practically everybody who was in that film, remember the scenes where they're roping off these wild Mustangs and all the dust is floating up around them, and so many of the people in that movie died of cancers.
The one state that ought to be up in arms about this is Utah.
That's
because
true.
Nevada can be bribed off, but Utah ought to know better.
And Utah is one of the downwind areas that is going to be hit hard. Hey, listen, Diane, I hate to do this, but we've got to go. I want to hear from you again, but I've got to take a break now. Thanks a lot, Diane. I appreciate it. We'll be back right after the break with tonight's reading. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
Of liberty and roses, if the CIA didn't inflict U.S. with crack, I wouldn't be shocked if they planned a 9/11 attack. And what if the father, the head of that organization? I think we need an investigation. I'm just saying, who's benefiting the most from this mayhem? The Constitution lays bloody in the devil's den, while fragments of freedom are being captured.
This is the Mike Molloy Show on Air America Radio.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, three buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. Two little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4K9-HERO or visit searchdogfoundation.org. Made possible by Search Dog USA.
Whether you have health insurance or not, chances are you don't have dental or vision coverage. But now, with the Optimum Health Discount Card, you and your family can get substantial savings of up to 60% off every time you visit your dentist or eye care professional. Because this is not insurance, everyone is accepted, even if you or your family members have pre-existing conditions. For only $9.95 a month, you, your spouse, and your children are all covered. Your membership includes access to our combined nationwide network of over 75,000 participating dentists and eye care professionals. Call right now and we'll also include for free the RX Saver discount prescription card. The RX Saver is accepted in most pharmacies nationwide and provides savings of up to 60% off most medications. Call our toll-free number now at 1-866-333-3000. That's 1-866-333-3000. Use the Optimum Health discount card risk-free for 30 days and start saving now on all of your dental and vision care needs. Call 1-866-333-3000. Again, 1-866-333-3000.
Every generation has a story to tell. For those who lived through the war in Iraq, it's The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell by John Crawford. The New York Times best-selling account of a man who opposed the war but fought on the front lines. The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell is the first on-the-ground memoir to make an impact, raves the Times Book Review. Jon Stewart of The Daily Show says it's a wonderful read. Time Magazine calls it harrowing and exquisite. Read The Last True Story I'll Ever Tell, now a Riverhead paperback.
We'll be right back.
We're in part three, chapter two of George Orwell's 1984. We are in that part of the novel where Winston Smith has been taken in for re-education. Let's put it that way. He has been suffering now, torture, for he doesn't know how long. Weeks, days, months, he has no idea. The interrogation has been going on. He floats in and out of consciousness. Let's pick it up there. He did not remember any ending to his interrogation. There was a period of blackness and then the cell or room in which he now had gradually materialized around him. He was almost flat on his back and unable to move. His body was held down at every essential point. Even the back of his head was gripped in some manner. O'Brien was looking down at him gravely and rather sadly. His face, seen from below, looked coarse and worn, with pouches under the eyes and tired lines from nose to chin. He was older than Winston had thought him. He was perhaps 48 or 50. Under his hand there was a dial with a lever on top and figures running around the face. "I told you," said O'Brien, "that if we met again, it would be here." "Yes," said Winston. Without any warning, except a slight movement of O'Brien's hand, a wave of pain flooded his body. It was a frightening pain because he could not see what was happening, and he had the feeling that some mortal injury was being done to him. He did not know whether the thing was really happening or whether the effect was electrically produced, but his body was being wrenched out of shape. The joints were being slowly torn apart. Although the pain had brought the sweat out on his forehead, the worst of all was the fear that his backbone was about to snap. He set his teeth and breathed hard through his nose, trying to keep silent as long as possible. "You are afraid," said O'Brien, watching his face. "You are afraid that in another moment something is going to break. Your special fear is that it will be your backbone. You have a vivid mental picture of the vertebrae snapping apart and the spinal fluid dripping out of them. That is what you are thinking, is it not, Winston?" Winston did not answer. O'Brien drew back the lever on the dial. The wave of pain receded almost as quickly as it had come. "That was 40, said O'Brien. "You can see that the numbers on this dial run up to 100. Will you please remember, throughout our conversation, that I have it in my power to inflict pain on you at any moment and to whatever degree I choose? If you tell me any lies or attempt to prevaricate in any way, or even fall below your usual level of intelligence, you will cry out with pain instantly. Do you understand that?" "Yes," said Winston. O'Brien's manner became less severe. He resettled his spectacles thoughtfully and took a pace or two up and down. When he spoke, his voice was gentle and patient. He had the air of a doctor, a teacher, even a priest, anxious to explain and persuade rather than to punish. "I am talking with you, Winston," he said, "because you are worth the trouble. You know perfectly well what is the matter with you. You've known it for years, so you have fought against the knowledge. You are mentally deranged. You suffer from a defective memory. You are unable to remember real events, and you persuade yourself that you remember other events which never happened. Fortunately, it is curable. You have never cured yourself of it because you did not choose to. There was a small effort of the will that you were not ready to make. Even now, I am well aware, you are clinging to your disease under the impression that it is virtue. Now, we will take an example. At this moment, which power is Oceania at war with?"
"When I was arrested, Oceania was at war with East Asia."
"With East Asia. Good. And Oceania has always been at war with East Asia, has it not?" Winston drew in his breath. He opened his mouth to speak and then did not speak. He could not take his eyes away from the dial. "The truth, please, Winston. Your truth. Tell me what you think you remember."
I remember that until only a week before I was arrested, we were not at war with East Asia at all. We were in alliance with them. The war was against Eurasia. That had lasted for 4 years. Before that, O'Brien stopped him with a movement of the hand. Another example, he said. Some years ago, you had a very serious delusion indeed. You believed that three one-time party members named Jones, Aronson, and Rutherford, men who were executed for treachery and sabotage after making the fullest possible confession, you believed they were not guilty of the crimes they were charged with. You believed that you had seen unmistakable documentary evidence proving that their confessions were false. There was a certain photograph about which you had a hallucination. You believed that you had actually held it in your hands. It was a photograph something like this. An oblong slip of newspaper had appeared between O'Brien's fingers. For perhaps 5 seconds, it was within the angle of Winston's vision. It was a photograph, and there was no question of its identity. It was the photograph. It was another copy of the photograph of Jones, Aronson, and Rutherford at the party function in New York, which he had chanced upon 11 years ago and promptly destroyed. For only an instant, it was before his eyes, then it was out of sight again. But he had seen it. Unquestionably, he had seen it. He made a desperate, agonizing effort to wrench the top half of his body free. It was impossible to move so much as a centimeter in any direction. For the moment, he had even forgotten the dial. All he wanted was to hold the photograph in his fingers again, or at least to see it. "It exists," he cried. "No," said O'Brien. He stepped across the room. There was a memory hole in the opposite wall. O'Brien lifted the grating. Unseen, the frail slip of paper was swirling away on the current of warm air. It was vanishing in a flash of flame. O'Brien turned away from the wall. "Ashes," he said. "Not even identifiable ashes. Dust. It does not exist. It never existed." "But it did. It does exist. It exists in memory. I remember it. You remember it." "I do not remember it," said O'Brien. Winston's heart sank. That was doublethink. He had a feeling of deadly helplessness. If he could have been certain that O'Brien was lying, it would not have seemed to matter, but it was perfectly possible that O'Brien had really forgotten the photograph. And if so, then already he would have forgotten his denial of remembering it, and forgotten the act of forgetting. How could one be sure that it was simple trickery? Perhaps that lunatic dislocation in the mind could really happen. That was the thought that defeated him. O'Brien was looking down at him speculatively. More than ever, he had the air of a teacher, taking pains with a wayward but promising child. "There is a party slogan, 'Dealing with the control of the past,'" he said. "Repeat it, if you please." Winston repeated obediently. "Who controls the past, controls the future. Who controls the present, controls the past. Who controls the present controls the past," said O'Brien, nodding his head with slow approval. "It is your opinion, Winston, that the past has real existence?" Again, the feeling of helplessness descended upon Winston. His eyes flitted towards the dial. He not only did not know whether yes or no was the answer that would save him from pain, he did not even know which answer he believed to be the true one. O'Brien smiled faintly. "You are no metaphysician, Winston," he said. "Until this moment, you had never considered what is meant by existence. I will put it more precisely. Does the past exist concretely in space? Is there somewhere or other a place, a world of solid objects, where the past is still happening?" "No." "Then where does the past exist, if at all?" In records. It's written down. "In records and in the mind, in human memories?" "In memory." "Very well, then. We, the party, control all records, and we control all memories. Then we control the past, do we not?"
"But how can you stop people remembering things?" cried Winston, again momentarily forgetting the dial. "It is involuntary. It is outside oneself. How can you control memory? You've not controlled mine."
O'Brien's manner grew stern again. He laid his hand on the dial. "On the contrary," he said, "you have not controlled it. That is what has brought you here. You are here because you have failed in humility, in self-discipline, You would not make the act of submission, which is the price of sanity. You preferred to be a lunatic, a minority of one. Only the disciplined mind can see reality, Winston. You believe that reality is something objective, external, existing in its own right. You also believe that the nature of reality is self-evident. When you delude yourself into thinking that you see something, you assume that everyone else sees the same thing as you. But I tell you, Winston, that reality is not external. Reality exists in the human mind and nowhere else, not in the individual mind, which can make mistakes and, in any case, soon perishes, only in the mind of the party, which is collective and immortal. Whatever the party holds to be truth is truth. It is impossible to see reality except by looking through the eyes of the party. That is the fact that you have got to relearn, Winston. It needs to be an act of self-destruction, an effort of the will. You must humble yourself before you can become sane.
Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
There are two kinds of bikers. There's the tough, hardcore biker like Smokey here.
Hey, bro.
And then there's the weekend rider like Jeff.
Hey, man.
These two bikers couldn't be more different, except for one thing. You both have Geico motorcycle insurance. Because Geico covers most kinds of motorcycles, and they offer money-saving discounts. So, you see, you guys, you have more in common than you thought.
Neat.
For a free rate quote on motorcycle insurance, visit geico.com or call 1-800-44-CYCLE. Geico Motorcycle Insurance. Let's ride.
You've got lawn weeds and crabgrass growing, well, like weeds. Until they're up against the science of Bayer Advanced All-in-One Weed Killer. All-in-One kills both lawn weeds plus crabgrass in one easy step without harming your lawn. Other leading brands take two products to finish the job. Got two types of weeds? Grab one simple solution and bring them back down to earth. Bayer Advanced All-in-One Weed Killer. Better science, better results.
10 before the hour. Alicia is the name I couldn't think of. One of our listeners sends me a lot of emails. Thanks, Alicia. She is one of the people, she and her husband are two of the people on the new Neil Young either album or that one cut, probably on the whole album, because I think Alicia and her husband are session musicians or singers or both. Happy Earth Day tomorrow. And for those of you who are up late enough, or unless you live on the West Coast, if you want to sit around and chuckle, you know, have something to drink or smoke, whatever. And at 10 p.m. tomorrow on CNN, I'm going to be on that CNN Saturday, I believe, right? With some right-winger. I don't know who it is. So 10 p.m. tomorrow, 7 Eastern. 10 p.m. tomorrow, 7 Pacific. Is that how you say it? I'm sorry. I'm trapped in the Eastern time zone. I know nothing. 10 o'clock tomorrow Eastern. The program is engineered tonight by the usual gang, Justin Yuen and Jason Isaac. Our associate producer is Dee Neal. She handled the phone calls tonight. Thank you, Dee. Chris in Minnesota is our senior correspondent. Ben Birch, White Rose Society, archives the program. Jim in Arkansas, our music bureau chief. And Catherine Bay, executive producer. We never did get to discussing Earth Day tonight, did we? Well, if it hadn't been for the Condoleezza's going to jail story, we would have gotten to it. Barbara is calling from Arizona. Barbara, welcome to the program. Thanks for holding on.
Mike, I'm streaking my way across the desert, trying to make it from Crawford, Texas to San Diego in one fell swoop. Thank you for keeping me company.
Oh, my goodness. You're coming from Camp Casey?
Yes, uh-huh. 1 week ago today, I was arrested with 14 others, and sadly, it barely made a blip on the national news, but we were down there protecting all of our First Amendment rights again.
Well, you know, I knew nothing about the arrests, nothing whatsoever.
No kidding. See, that's really a shame. That is really a shame. We had six Vietnam-era vets, one young wounded Iraqi vet, and six singing Grammys, and we all spent last Friday in jail.
Oh,
we even had to wash our hair and put on other people's unders and wear those black and white jail suits.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Well, Cindy used to call the program periodically, but I think I've fallen off of her radar screen. She has important things to do, and calling this program is not one of them. But if you do get in touch with her, or when you get in touch with her again, ask her to call the program once in a while, because the because national media has written her off now. They've written the whole thing off. They're not going to have any part with any part of her heartfelt and sincere protest. It's too much for MSNBC or ABC or CBS or the usual gang of bandits. You know what I'm saying?
Well, Mike, you know, that's really unfortunate, because we had over 2,500 people over the last week there, and they again came from every single state in the country. So
wow.
It's sad that they have done that, but we have you, and we have, you know, we do have David Swanson at After Downing Street, who was a great supporter of the impeach movement, and so many others. Truth Out was down there for the whole week. Scott Galindez. Just an amazing group of people. But anyway, I just wanted to check in with you and thank you for keeping me company. And it looks like I'm going to make it. I got 263 miles.
All right. Well, keep your hands on the wheel, okay?
Thanks, Mike. Love you.
All right, Barbara. Take care. Take care. Did you say something to irritate Cindy Sheehan, Kathy? She used to call the program fairly regularly with updates about what was going on. And just like Barbara said, it's impossible to get any information about what's going on there from mainstream media. I realize that after Downing Street and Truth Out, there are several really good progressive websites who put it out there. But as you know, we spend so much time trying to put these shows together every day, it's almost impossible to cover it all.
The woman's got to sleep.
That's true. That's true. She's got to sleep. Do we have time for another call? Raul is calling from San Bernardino, California. Raul, welcome to the program.
Hey, my first-time caller.
Well, welcome aboard. I hate to do this to you, but I can give you about a minute.
Okay, I just want to let you know, I'm in San Bernardino. President Bush will be in Palm Springs, which is a whole 60 miles away from here.
Uh-huh.
And
that's tomorrow, right?
Yes, it is. He's actually there for 3 days. He's going to be in Indian Wells, which is home to the filthy, disgusting rich. And it just so happens to be that President Ford, ex-President Ford, however you want to call him, just issued a statement not too long ago. It's in the Desert Sun. You can check it out if you like, saying that damn the generals that have come out against Rumsfeld and asking for his resignation.
Oh,
and
it just, wow.
And Ford is a resident of Rancho Mirage, which is where Bush is going to be at for the next 3 days.
And how old is Ford now? Isn't he in his 90s?
He's 92, I believe. And 92. His wife's just, yeah, Betty Ford was just in the hospital yesterday, I heard. So.
Yeah, yeah. It's a shame when somebody who should know better makes a statement like that. But keep in mind that Ford is the one who pardoned Nixon. And as a result of that pardon, the truth about Richard Nixon's criminal activities were never revealed to the extent that they should have been.
Exactly.
So, I wish former President Ford a long life. Let him live to be 150. It's just a shame that he has to make a statement that supports some murderous thug like Rumsfeld. Oh, well.
Yep, I will be out there. Hopefully, I keep my head straight and I don't get arrested. So.
Well, do it, Raul. Do it. Take care. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate it. All right, Truth Seekers, thanks for participating in the program tonight. I do appreciate it. I'll see you Monday, okay? Have a good weekend. Take care. Watch your back, all right? I'm Mike Malloy. This is Air America Radio. Oh, yeah, have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.
America Radio.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the Civil Rights Movement, and now we're trying to develop a Silver Rights Movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers, business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at operationhope.org.